Welcome. ESPN 1700 AM is the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
Big Mac David McKelvin,
and myself, Ryan White. With us today, Alex Kinnander. She is a certified financial planner with DM Brenner and Associates, the website dmbrenner.com. She is going to talk to us about the six ways, the biggest six ways, the most important six ways, perhaps some of the easiest solved six ways people are leaving money on the table. And I think we can all understand why we don't want to leave any money on the table. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ryan.
Also with us today, Marguerite Lorenz. This might be fourth, fifth time repeat offender.
Something like that.
Something like that. Started to lose track. She is a CLPF number 319. What is that?
California Licensed Professional Fiduciary.
Number 319.
That's correct.
And how many of them are you?
Well, there are over 750 active licenses. Well, I should say that differently. There have been 780 licenses issued, but only about 700 active licensees in the whole state of California.
Does not sound like very many.
There are not very many of us. No, we're special.
She is a partner at Lorenz Fiduciary Services. Her website, mytrustee.net. That's the website, mytrustee.net. And we are going to find out just how special she is.
Yeah, I mean, people that are listening may actually want to know more about what you do. So you're a fiduciary.
Right.
And if you've ever been named in a trust or you've ever been a beneficiary, you might understand why you might want a fiduciary in your planning. So tell us a little bit about what it is that you do and how you help people avoid arguments.
Well, as a fiduciary, I take on a special responsibility. It's a highly trusted position because I really have to put the client first. The client's interests have to be before my own. And I serve as a trustee, executor, agent under the power of attorney for finance, and often as agent for healthcare. So I'm not an advisor. I actually become the decision maker. So you are the trustor, the creator of your trust, of your estate plan. You're going to work with a qualified attorney to get that estate plan in writing. You might have a financial advisor. You might have a CPA. Those professionals are your advisors. It's you making the action. It's you writing the document. It's you creating this estate plan. But when the time comes and you become incapacitated, or you resign, or you die, your successor trustee basically sits in your chair, potentially working with those very same advisors and carrying out whatever you set in motion when you created your estate plan.
Okay, so you set a trust in place, you protect yourself because you certainly don't want to go through probate. You put a will in place, and then you assign somebody to be your trustee. Maybe the child that you trust the most, maybe the one that has it together, maybe the one that's the peacekeeper, maybe it's the baby, maybe it's the elder, who knows? Maybe it's somebody that you appoint outside of the family. Is that something that can happen?
Well, let's stay with the first examples you gave. All those people sound like they also might be beneficiaries.
Absolutely, they will be.
So when you're asking someone who's going to inherit your money to also make tax, legal, financial, and medical decisions for you, you had better think about it. Maybe you should talk to them. Maybe you should really set out what your expectations are. Because you're asking someone to be in the highest ethical position in your life, and you've also made them someone who's going to inherit from you. Is that fair? You think it's not going to cross their mind? Maybe your child is perfect and it's their spouse that's messed up. But I will tell you, it makes it very, very challenging for someone to be clear about the choices they have to make as your fiduciary, as your representative, when they're also inheriting from you.
Sure. You know, my father taught me that, you know, people get funny around money. Right.
Yes.
So, you know, you start loaning your friends money, you know, that starts getting weird. You know, so there are certain things that you want to pay attention to when it comes to your assets in your life.
Well, let's add on top of that the issues of control. You're dealing with the same adults. So they might be 68 and 65 and 63 now, but those are the same kids that used to fight over the front seat of the car. Their dynamic with each other and with you as their parents has not changed at all in all that time.
Well, I'd like to think things have changed, but maybe not. You know, maybe not. So, you know, when you allocate someone to be the trustee of your trust, you're putting a lot of responsibility in their hands, as well as possibly creating the chances for, you know, the family to not get along.
Well, as soon as you give one kid more love, attention, money, or power than you do the others.
Could be perceived love, money, or attention, or power.
And that's what we're really talking about. You know, I recommend to my clients that they write love letters to their kids. Not every kid is going to get the same amount of money as the others. There may be more need. There may be money that was loaned earlier in life that's being paid back now with the inheritance. You know, there's a lot of different circumstances that happen in different families. What I see with a lot of folks is they don't talk about their money with their kids. You know, I chatted with a lady who's in her 80s, and she was adamant that her son was going to be her trustee. And I said, well, great. Maybe you should talk to him about what your finances are and what your plans are for where you want to live, because that costs money. You have to make a plan for getting the care that you need. And she said, I'm not telling him how much I have. And I thought, well, that's an interesting choice as successor trustee.
Eventually he's going to find out.
Well, not only will he find out, but he may find out when you are deeply in crisis, and then you can't help make those decisions, and you're really not in control anymore. So if you're going to hand over the keys of your life's car to somebody else, it's more than just trust. It's understanding that they have the experience, that they can be objective, that they're willing to follow through. People think the job ends after the funeral. I have news for you. It can be 3 to 5 years after someone dies when you're finally done.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we are talking with Marguerite Lorenz, a fiduciary. And a fiduciary is someone that the family appoints to handle the trust. Isn't that right?
Well, the trustors, the creators of the trust. The children in the family are usually not the ones who pick me. It's usually mom and dad who've selected me to handle things professionally, concisely. They know I'm insured. They know I have experience. And they know that I have no axe to grind or any history with their kids. So I can treat all their kids equally. That's the point of my job. Not only am I serving the trustors, but I treat all the beneficiaries equally.
Yeah, I mean, when someone sees that their loved one is ailing and they start to think, well, wait a second, what is it going to be like after they pass away? And they start to think, well, wait a second, you know, who is going to be the trustor? And then they think, well, are they going to treat me fairly? This is a recipe for a family feud.
Potentially. And the trustor, just to be clear, is the creator of the trust. The trustee, like an employee, is the one who does the work. So I implement the trusts. They do have to be written properly. They have to be executed, meaning they have to be signed and dated. So when you complete your estate plan, it's really up to you to make those decisions. The kids may or may not like your choices, but they're still your choices, and it's your money.
So someone would appoint you as a third party to execute the wishes that they have in their trust.
Correct.
And they would be able to get a hold of you by reaching out at 877-630-8448. That's Marguerite Lorenz. Can be reached directly at 877-630-8448. Is that right?
Or my website, mytrustee.net.
So you're also a certified trust and financial planner.
No, it's Certified Trust and Financial Advisor, and let's be clear, that's a bank trust officer designation. My company and I, we do not sell any financial products, but it's interesting that that title would be a bank trust officer title. I went to the banking industry, I took their classes, I passed their exam. But isn't it interesting how it reveals their conflict of interest? You know, they have proprietary financial products, and you may love your bank, but when the time comes, they're going to make a business decision as to whether your case is large enough for them to accept or they'll just decline.
Really?
So I have training through the banking industry. I continue my education. I know what's going on in that industry. So it's important that you know who you're working with, what their designations are, what those letters after their name mean, and what services they are appropriately trained to offer you.
So let's touch on this briefly, and then we'll come back to it. You host, do you call it seminars, educational workshops?
Yes. And,
it's called Estate Planning 101.
Correct.
Right? And you're heavily involved. And so the website for that is, of course, estateplanning101.org. They are free, yes?
They're completely free, including the materials.
What goes on there?
Well, it's a strictly charity-sponsored educational program for people that really want to understand their own estate plan. We don't offer all the answers. We offer you better questions. And we really give you an opportunity to get to understand what the big concepts are, some of the details, so you can go back to your attorney, your financial advisor, your tax preparer, and really ask those questions that are going to serve you best. We offer 12 hours of education. We meet four times. So we're doing two classes every time we get together. And I've got great speakers and a great program. And just to be clear, that website is estateplanning101.org, O-R-G.
And these are ongoing, right?
We have four programs scheduled during the year. Our next one is at the Museum of Art at Balboa Park. We have plenty of room. Do be prepared to walk, however. Parking is challenging at the park these days. And we'll also be at Cal State San Marcos, the Salvation Croc Center, which is a beautiful campus. And our last class is going to be with the Girl Scouts of San Diego.
So quarterly thereabouts, there is the availability.
Yeah, I call it a season.
Got it. Okay, good enough. Season. And each one is 12 hours.
Right.
Right? So is a lot of information available. One more time, the website for that is estateplanning101.org. Go there and get more information as far as, well, as you mentioned, not necessarily the right answers, but the right questions.
Right, right. You'll want to register for class. It's free, completely free. And registration, you'll get all the details, where to park, and when to meet us.
So this is 12 hours?
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot. What was it you cover in 12 hours?
Well, we start with quality of life. We talk about what it really costs to stay in your home no matter what. Most classes don't cover that information. And we cover that because I feel that your estate plan really needs to protect you. Then we go into what the documents do, your advanced health care directive, the powers of attorney. What is conservatorship? That's just the first day. The next day, we actually talk about advanced and basic estate planning. By the time we get to charitable giving and we talk about what successor trustees do for a living, wow, you're really knowledgeable and you have a much better foundation from which to make these choices.
We're talking with Marguerite Lorenz, partner at Lorenz Fiduciary Services. Her website, mytrustee.net. That's her website, mytrustee.net. When we come back, we are going to talk with Alex Conander about the six ways people leave money on the table, as well as go deeper as far as, well, you've got a book here, Ethics for Trustees.
Yes.
With Marguerite, and a little bit more about her free seminar, Estate Planning 101, when we come back. Welcome back, ESPN 1700 AM. We've been speaking with Marguerite Lorenz, partner at Lorenz Fiduciary Services. Her website, mytrustee.net. That's the website, mytrustee.net. Now we're going to shift over to the six ways people are leaving money on the table. And we're going to talk with Alex Conander, certified financial planner with DM Brenner and Associates. Their website, dmbrenner.com. That's the website, dmbrenner.com. And so, Alex, you say there's six, and I would imagine these are the biggest six ways, because there's a lot of ways, but these are the biggest six ways people are leaving the most money on the table. And not only are they the ways people are leaving money on the table, but more importantly, you have some solutions.
Correct.
So you've got Social Security at the top here. Let's talk about Social Security. How do I not leave my Social Security money on the table?
Correct, Ryan. It's not the only one, and not the most important one, but we can start with that. I think a lot of times people overlook when to start taking benefits. They assume I stop working, I start taking my Social Security benefits. Well, there you can start as early as 62 or as late as 70, and for each year that you delay, you earn an 8% credit. It's called a delayed retirement credit. And that can make a big difference in the long run. So particularly for married couples.
Well, let me make sure I understand that. So if I'm 62 and I start taking my benefits versus 63 and I start taking my benefits, I would get an 8% credit at 63?
Correct.
And what does that mean, an 8% credit?
That means that if you were to take 2,000, if you're benefit is $2,000 and you wait 1 year, then it's going to be $2,160. So for each
8%
year, 8% more.
Okay.
And that's all adjusted for inflation. In general, for a single person, if they turn out to live past 85 years of age, it would have made sense to wait until age 70 to take benefits. The decision is not always that simple. You have to look throughout the life of the retirement, how much more income they're going to get and what portion is going to be taxable, whether they're still working or not. But the answer is the longevity. And if you feel like, given your family history and your current health, that you might be living past age 85, then it would have made sense to wait until age 70. And the biggest planning opportunities are with married couples, where there are certain strategies that can really maximize your Social Security benefits.
So, again, back to this extra 8%. So by waiting from 62 to, let's say, 70, the outer edge of the spectrum there, that would be an extra 8 years?
Correct.
So theoretically, 8% times 8 years?
Correct.
Would give me 64% more income by waiting 8 years?
Correct.
There's not a whole lot of things that you can invest in to get an 8% year-over-year return.
Yes. And and that and the inflation adjustment, correct. So most of the time, it does make sense to wait. Of course, each individual situation is going to be different.
So you'd look at the general picture and see if this person can afford to wait.
Correct.
Right? I mean, if they're they're retired and there's no money, then waiting is not an option.
And we've come across cases like that where people started taking at 62 and it made sense. But I encourage people to carefully look at it and not just instinctively make that sort of decision, because it can make a difference in the long run.
Well, you mentioned some additional tricks for married couples.
Correct.
How does that play out?
So let's suppose they're a married couple and they're approximately the same age and let's assume that the husband is the higher income earner. As he turns 66, he can do what we call file and suspend. He can file for benefits but not receive any and continue to accrue the 8% that we talked about. At the same time, the wife can file for spousal benefits, and she gets 50% of his full retirement age benefit, and he continues to accrue his 8%, and then at age 70, he starts his own benefits. Now, they're going to be 32% greater than at 66, and if he predeceases her, she then bumps up to his maximum benefit. So in the example that we had where he made $2,000, when she turns 66, she can start collecting $1,000. When he turns 70, he starts collecting $2,640 per month. When he dies, she's entitled for the $2,640 for her life. So she was able to receive some benefits between age 60, and she can also get her own benefits on her own work record when she turns 70 at the maximum rate. So there's several combinations that you can do within the married couples because of this, what we called free spousal benefit.
We're talking with Alex Canander, certified financial planner with DM Brenner & Associates. Her website is DM Brenner, that's BRENNER.com, DMBrenner.com. That was fairly complicated.
I know.
So let's try that one more time, because it seemed like a really unique unique strategy there. A married couple.
Yes.
And he, which you're assuming is the higher wage earner, is going to file and suspend, which means he's going to say, start my benefits here, but don't actually pay me?
Correct. That allows, at his age 66, that allows his wife, and in fact also his ex-wife, if she's been married with him for more than 10 years, to collect half of his full retirement age benefit at that point.
Okay.
So his wife would then start collecting, in this example of $2,000 of full retirement age benefit, she would start collecting $1,000. And he hasn't started, he filed and suspended, so he is still earning those 8% that we talked about up until when he turns 70. And then he can start his maximum benefit. And that's also gonna be his wife's survivor benefit. So he really maximized his own benefit, but at the same time, they were able to withdraw some money in the meantime.
So presuming that his wife is going to share that $1,000 with him, it kind of seems like he gets his cake and eats it too.
Yes.
Or at least eats a portion of it.
That's exactly what happens.
You know, I understand all of Johnny Carson's ex-wives are still collecting.
How many are there?
I think there's four.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. It works.
That's a nice strategy on their part. Right?
Yeah. None of them have remarried.
Yes, you cannot remarry, and you have to have been married for more than 10 years, but yes.
Okay. Okay. Well, that certainly sounds, and I see what you're saying by the additional tricks you can play with a married couple.
Yes.
Certainly makes sense.
Yes. And the wife, too, when she turns 70, if her earning record was high, she can then start have her cake and eat it too, and start at her maximum benefit.
And her getting half of his benefits doesn't really diminish the benefits that she can receive on her own accord.
Correct.
Oh, that's wonderful. Again, we're talking with Alex Canander, Certified Financial Planner. Her website, dmbrenner.com. That's her website, dmbrenner.com. Choosing the right retirement plan. You've got that on the list here. But stepping back for a second, financial planning and just being investment management, which is kind of the way I think most people think of it. We've had Dave on before, and he really wanted to emphasize the fact that he was more of a financial concierge. So
yes.
Instead of quoting rates of return and picking the right investment, which certainly is a part of the job,
yes.
you're working on ways to not only yield a high return, but keeping the money,
yes.
such as Social Security strategies like this, which seemed to be a lot about what he was preaching.
Yes. As financial advisors, I believe, and our experience is that we can make a more quantifiable and a greater impact by managing those decisions than by simply choosing a fund manager. Obviously, it's important to have an appropriately diversified portfolio and manage your investments, but these decisions are overlooked sometimes and not traditionally associated with the financial advisor, but they can really make or break a retirement projection in our experience. Like we just talked, 8% is more than you can...
It's a lot
more
nowadays.
Often than you can earn on the market. And that's guaranteed by the government. It's not just a projection from your financial advisor thinking that the mutual fund X is going to perform that.
Well, what I think is unique is that I think most financial advisors put the focus on, again, yearly returns. And I certainly don't mean to say that that is not a large part of what you guys do, but getting the money is only a portion of it. It's keeping it and
Correct.
Using it that is really what we want. And it really seems that that is a
yes.
big focus over there at D.M. Brenner.
Correct. Saving appropriately, having the discipline to save, doing the, managing your debt appropriately, all that is something that we have a lot more control over than the market returns. We don't really know what the market is going to do. It is going to do what it's going to do. All that we can prepare for is to be properly diversified and have a portfolio that's risk and age appropriate. The other decisions, you are in the driver's seat. You can sit down with your advisor and decide when to take Social Security, how much to save through your retirement plan, and other expenses that you have in the household and your debt management, that's when you can make a big difference.
Yeah, I can really see how you're able to get in there and again, increase not only the bottom line that comes in, but the bottom line that stays in.
Yes.
And that can be equally as important.
Yes.
Well, that certainly does make sense. We've been talking with Alex Canander, Certified Financial Planner with D.M. Brenner & Associates, the website dmbrenner.com. 6 ways people leave money on the table. We talked about Social Security strategies and the difference of taking your contributions at age 62 versus age 70 and what can be done juggling that contribution there, so to speak, with respect to a married partners and exactly how, would you say, file and suspend
yes.
can be done to continue to kick off a little bit of money while continuing to retain that same 8%. When we come back, we're going to talk more with our author, Marguerite Lorenz, perhaps a little bit about ethics for trustees, and get a little bit further into her estate planning 101 workshops ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back, ESPN 1700 AM, the Real Estate Radio Hour, with your host,
Big Mac David McKelvin.
And myself, Ryan White. We've been talking with Alex Canander, Certified Financial Planner with D.M. Brenner & Associates, talking about ways people leave money on the table. We talked about some Social Security strategies, and we're going to come back to talk about retirement planning, health insurance, pension maximization, distributions, annuities. It goes on and on. All that in about 10 minutes. I'm going to shift gears back to Marguerite Lorenz. She is partner at Lorenz Fiduciary Services. Her website is mytrustee.net. That's the website, mytrustee.net.
You know, speaking of money on the table, you've worked your whole life and you've accumulated a lot of it. And now you are starting to see that, you know, getting old isn't the same as it used to be. It is tough getting old.
It's not for sissies, David.
It is not for sissies. It is not. And you start to see a desire for help in this process. So when I start to think about a fiduciary, you know, I start to think, when should I reach out and enable somebody to become a fiduciary, or should I just not do it at all? And should I have a family member bear that burden? So what is your take on when should somebody reach out and consider having a fiduciary?
Well, I think when you turn 18, you should have an advanced healthcare directive. You know, life can be a little dangerous. Just because you have parents doesn't mean they'll have access to you in a hospital. So that's why I'd like to move us off of death planning and move us into quality of life planning. Because with that advanced healthcare directive, now you've actually given someone else permission to come in, see you, and possibly make decisions on your behalf if you cannot communicate. You know, your head got hit that hard. Now what happens? So how old do you need to be? I say if you have a body, you need a plan. If you're breathing and you can hear me, you need to make an appointment with an estate planning attorney and get your documents up to date or get them done in the first place. And you need to talk to an estate planning attorney. Law is very complicated, and you really want someone who specializes in that area of law. So now once you are ready to talk to that estate planning attorney, you may talk about a trust because you own property, or you might be married, or you have children, or you want things to go a certain way. You know, if your kids are little, you have no idea how they're going to handle money when they receive it. So your initial focus when you do your estate plan are a lot of what ifs. What if I can't be the one to take care of my child? What if I can't be the one to manage my own finances? Who's going to do it instead of me? And what do I want them to do? And what don't I want them to do? That's how much power you have. So I feel that getting your estate plan done expresses the gratitude you have for the beautiful life you've created. And you give yourself a way to stay in control even when you've lost control.
You know, my grandfather, who is a great man, is 91 years old and is taking care of his wife of 50 years.
Oh.
And, you know, she is starting to lose her memory and things like that. And one of the things when I sat down with him recently that he was really proud of was the fact that he wasn't a burden on his family.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, he is now living in one of my dad's properties. My dad has a beautiful property with four units on it, and he lives in one of them. But he pays my dad rent, not because my dad asked him for that, but because he doesn't want to be a burden. He wants to contribute his share. And that is something that, you know, when you hire somebody or allocate somebody in the family to begin taking care of you, are you going to be burdening them with your issues?
Well, if somebody has to take time off work to meet the realtor and the locksmith at the house, you know, then they have to be compensated for the time they had to take off work. You know, if you're going to ask a family member to step up and be responsible, make sure the homeowner's insurance policy has been paid, make sure that the sale is beneficial for everyone, to make sure that there's so many legal, financial, tax, and even medical issues that your trustee, your person, will have to decide. That of course they should take some time off work. Maybe they need to read some books. Maybe they need to understand what the question is before they answer it. Is your family member really equipped to handle the pressure, to handle the pressure from other family members who want money now, even though they're not necessarily entitled to it? Are they going to be able to deal with the tax issues? Are they going to be able to deal with any other legal issues that you might have been dealing with up until the moment where you couldn't anymore? I mean, these are the kinds of what ifs that you really need to explore with your attorney. And what does that cost to have the peace of mind where you can relax and know that if something terrible happened, you would still have a backup plan and things would still go the way you planned them to happen?
You know, when I think of assigning one of my family members to handle my estate when I can no longer handle it, was that the trustor?
Trustee.
Okay, the trustee is who I would assign to handle my trust.
Correct. You're the trustor.
And I think what you're saying is, why wouldn't that person get compensated because they're now having to do these extra things like show up at the door, open it up with the locksmith, with the realtor, this sort of thing? And yet I can imagine the other, in the sense is the trustors, are thinking to themselves, you know, why are they getting more?
Okay, so the siblings are really the ones who'd be concerned about that. They probably weren't the ones pushing the wheelchair in the first place, the ones who are concerned. So I get it. You want to split things equally among your three kids. But the activity, the work involved in getting everything marshaled, put together, accounted for, and distributed should not be neglected. Can you imagine how resentful someone would be? Oh, surprise, you're now responsible for a $1 million estate. There's a $500,000 house, there's an IRA, there's some gold coins. Oh, and there's this limited partnership, which I think is worth $1 million, but we only get $10 a month for it. And then you have to split that $10 three ways. And you have to deal with the arguments about what it might really be worth. You can see just from that little bit that there can be a lot of complications involved. So don't just expect your kids to do this for you for their share of it. Expect to compensate them. You wouldn't ask your kid to just fix your car and not pay them to do it.
It seems like a very thankless position to be in, right? I mean, for one, you know, the family is resentful. They're thinking, hey, you know, you're the one is in charge of my one-third, one-fourth, whatever it happens to be, or one-half.
Right.
You know, and, you know, now you have to actually do it. So you've been assigned this huge responsibility, and a lot of times the family members hate you for it.
Hey, I don't know what your family's like, but I have family members, no matter what I do, they wouldn't be happy. And, you know, my parents, remarriage has been a family value. So I think I'm like one of 11 now. And in my immediate family, my stepmom and my brother and I are in business together, and we trust each other and we talk about everything. When the time comes for one of us to be in that space where we really need that kind of help, we're good because we've really talked it out. But on another side of my family, you know, I've had siblings where they've already borrowed so much money from my folks that I wanted to see it in the estate plan. Hey, you're going to make sure this person pays it all back, right? And I don't want to be that trustee, because I would be standing right there saying, and I'm taking this off the top because you owe it. And you were never nice to mom anyway.
Right. Then people just start getting resentful. You know, again, back to the whole thankless process. You know, if you are interested in getting your family affair in order, we're not just pointing out the problem. We're actually providing the solution. On June 4th, Marguerite Lorenz is actually having a free event, the Estate Planning 101 event. Is that right?
Right. And you can sign up at estateplanning101.org. It's free. You sign up. You come to class. If you don't like coming to Balboa Park, that's okay. We have three other courses available this year.
Oh, this year, where are they?
We're doing it at the Salvation Army Croc Center, which is a beautiful campus down in San Diego. We're at Cal State San Marcos in the McMahon Building. I'm so proud to be on that university campus.
You know, that's the one that's really close to me.
Yeah, it's and thank goodness it's safe. Thank goodness everybody in San Diego.
Yeah, the fire got pretty close to that.
Yeah, I'm sorry for the homes that burned and for the losses that we've had. I'm very grateful for our firefighters and all our first responders. Thank you all for working so hard. They got those fires out pretty quick. And we're
grateful. It was really interesting to see how the fire spread like that.
Yeah, my webinar on Thursday was canceled because of the fire, so we're going to reschedule that too. So if you Google my name, Marguerite Lorenz, or you come to our website, mytrustee.net, we'll let you know where to learn more.
And there's this webinar. You're doing a webinar?
Yeah, we don't have a new date for it yet. It got postponed because of the fires. But if you take a look at our website, mytrustee.net, we'll have some links for you. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter under San Diego Trustee.
You can actually find you on yahoo.com. Is that right?
Just Google me.
Well, what about the book that you wrote, this Ethics
Amazon.
For Trustees? Amazon.
Amazon.com. Okay. You can definitely find Ethics for Trustees on Amazon. It's available on Kindle as well as paperback. And we find it really helpful because it's not a how to be a trustee. It's more about the ethical exploration and what you're really asking your family members to do for you. I mean, really, you're asking somebody who's going to inherit from you to make medical decisions for you. Just think about it.
Okay, so before we get much further into this, I just wanted to recap on that Estate Planning 101 class that you're giving on June 4th. That's coming up really quick.
Right.
You can sign up for that at estateplanning101.org.
We've been talking with Marguerite Lorenz, one more time, partner with Lorenz Fiduciary Services, her website, mytrustee.net. That's her website, mytrustee.net. When we come back, more with Alex Canander, certified financial planner. Some of the ways people are leaving money on the table and how not to. Ahead of us, when we come back. Welcome back, ESPN 1700 AM. is the Real Estate Radio Hour. We've been talking with Marguerite Lorenz, partner at Lorenz Fiduciary Services. She is a fiduciary. Her website, mytrustee.net. One more time, the website, mytrustee.net. Now, shifting gears, Alex Canander, Certified Financial Planner, DM Brenner Associates, dmbrenner.com, talking about six ways people leave money on the table and, more importantly, how not to. We talked briefly about Social Security strategies, and we're going to move on to retirement plans, choosing the right retirement plan. How do I do that?
Well, we all know that Social Security is not going to be enough to support most of the retirees' lifestyle. The great thing about the right retirement plan is it allows you to not pay taxes on the money that you put away towards your retirement on those years that you're making most money and at a higher tax bracket, saving that, letting it grow for you. And then when the time comes when you want to take those distributions, you're going to be presumably in a lower tax bracket and pay less taxes over that money that you would have when you were working. So the question is, why wouldn't everybody do that to the maximum extent that they can to get ready for retirement and save some money in taxes? And you'd be surprised by how many people don't really. They think if they're saving too little, it's not worth the trouble. They're leaving money on the table. On 401k plans, a lot of employers will offer a 3% match. Why wouldn't you put away 3% of your salary and get another 3% free in your retirement account? I was reading a survey, and it says about 25% of people across all ages are not saving for retirement. Another half of 40-year-and-plus people interviewed said that they regret not having saved more, not having started earlier to save for retirement. And there's a lot of options when it comes to what retirement plan to choose, particularly if you're self-employed.
So 25% of people out there aren't saving anything.
Yes.
They intend to live off Social Security, or they simply don't have a plan.
No, it's their parents' inheritance.
Well, yes. Right? Those are less and less common, too, because the parents are living longer. And they are spending their own money in health care and long-term care.
Yeah, I just heard a lady say it's a sin to die with any money in the bank.
So I have not seen a lot of inheritance. They just start late and they struggle. And that's that's a shame, because if you start early, it grows for you, and it's a disciplined way of saving. It comes out of your paycheck, particularly the 401k comes out of your paycheck. You don't even see it. You get a tax break on that money that you put away, and it has to be the primary source of retirement funds for everybody.
Well, I would imagine the presumption is made is that if you're contributing to your retirement, you're making more money than you either need or want to spend today. And one might say the amount of money that you're needing or wanting to spend today is something that can change.
Absolutely.
Based on the lifestyle you want to live. But certainly additional money is needed to contribute to this retirement plan. So dialing back on, you know, the Rolls Royce or
yes.
the Bentley or the Rolex may be necessary
yes.
in order to continue the retirement
yes.
planning.
You know, I guess that's really the bottom line is the plan, right?
Yeah.
And people can't make these decisions for you,
yes.
right? Because when you guys were earlier talking about the Social Security, you know, at age 62, you can take it, and at age 70, you get an 8% increase. You know, I mean, personally, I think, you know, at 9/10 ownership is possession, and why wouldn't I want to harvest a return? I can take that money, put it somewhere else. And, you know, I mean, certainly these are decisions that are people are making based on their current health position.
Yes.
You know, where they are financially, what, you know, whether or not they feel Social Security is going to be around very much longer. I mean, these are the decisions people are making for themselves. And so when I think about the conversation we're having, it really boils down to plan.
But yeah. you're also talking about a landscape that's constantly changing. And the reason you need to talk with professionals is because we attend continuing education. We have to receive a certain amount of training. We talk to each other. We learn from each other. You know, Congress could make a new decision next year and change the entire landscape and of the benefits we're talking about. So it's not enough to just plan it. You can't set it and forget it. You have to stay up to date. And when you work with good professionals, they will keep you up to date.
Absolutely. When it comes to the retirement plan that you choose and how much you put away, we've worked with clients that are just starting their career, and it's not refraining from buying a Rolls Royce. It's a little bit here and there. It's
no
that,
Starbucks for you.
It's Starbucks and the dinner.
That's what a lot of people think financial planning is all about.
Yeah.
You know, but when you it get doesn't to have
the
to be that way.
No, when you get to the level of the Bentley and the Rolls Royce, and you look at a self-employed person, he could be putting away up to $200,000 in a defined benefit plan without paying any taxes on it for now. And a lot of people are not thinking. We encourage people to look at it, talk to a professional, or right. educate yourself and look at these decisions and not just go on autopilot. And you're going to have to save money for retirement. And there is vehicles that will allow you to do that and save money on taxes, too.
We're talking with Alex Kinnander. She is a certified financial planner with D.M. Brenner & Associates. The website, dmbrenner.com. That's the website, dmbrenner.com. Talking about the six ways people leave money on the table and how not to. We're not going to get through all of them, but on the website, all six are listed there. One more time, the website, dmbrenner.com. Now, speaking as to how the rules are changing, what is the max 401k contribution amount this year?
This year is $17,500, and if you're 50 and older, you can put an additional $5,500 in the plan as well. Another thing, we encourage people, sometimes you're switching jobs and you're not immediately eligible to start contributing to your 401k. If you become eligible towards the end of the year, why not then make a higher contribution for those last 2 or 3 months, or even if you just got eligible in December, put as much as you can in that month. Use your savings account to support you for the last few months of the year and get the benefit of the tax deduction on that year for the full amount. You don't have to necessarily spread it out through 12 months. If you lose your job and you're not eligible for a 401k the entire year, why not just put away $5,000 in an IRA? That's better than nothing. It's still a tax deduction.
So how recently did the cap change to be $17,500?
It can change every year at times. The IRS makes that decision based on the...
But it did somewhat recently right? How recently did it change?
I believe
in the last few years, right?
Well, every year it increases a little bit. It used to be $17,000. It used to be $16,500. It's based on inflation correction and just a determination by the IRS. And keep up with it. You know, sometimes people set up their 401k deductions thinking of the older limits. And, you know, the HR department is not going to call you and say, do you want to put in more money in your 401k?
No, it's your financial advisor's job.
Exactly. That's what we do. So keep up with it. If you have a little bit of, if you have a side business, you can set up a little SEP and put 20% of that into a retirement plan on top of a 401k if you're an employee of a big company.
Well, so let's talk about that. Back up for just a second. What is a SEP?
It's a self-employed IRA. It's a very, very simple plan. You know, people are not aware of it, but all that really needs to be done is to open an account titled the SEP IRA, and you can then immediately put up to 20% of your self-employment income into that account, and up to $52,000 if you're making that much money, if that's, you know, if you're making over $200,000. So that's a very simple plan to establish. A simple IRA is another very simple plan to establish.
So it sounds simple, but it's very important that you work with professionals to get these things in place. I strongly recommend that you allow your financial advisor and CPA to talk to each other and maybe even include the attorney in that discussion. And if you have a succession plan in your business or you plan on having the fiduciary would be welcome to that conversation too. The idea is that you are the CEO, you are the captain of the ship, and we're all here to serve you.
I agree. When David Brenner was on the show, he talked of the financial planner as a financial concierge. We love interacting with the CPA. They're completely aware of your situation. And we also appreciate when CPAs tell their clients what to do. Some CPAs have a more proactive stance, and we always ask if the clients have an estate plan in place. If not, we encourage. And we also do that follow-up. You know, people are busy. They got kids, they're working, they have those things in their to-do list, and they never get around to do it. it's our job. We bug them. We're like, did you call your attorney? Did you set up your plan? Did you talk to your CPA? Did you make your contribution? That's part of our job, and that plays a really big role at the end of the day, because it's more money they're saving. They're being more diligent about their finances.
And it sounds really expensive, but I will tell you, when these kinds of plans are in place and things are starting to flow, when the time comes that you really need to rely on what you saved and rely on the plan, it saves you thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yes, you can't put a price tag on being ready and being aware of your finances and know that, you know, looking at your projections and know that at the end of the day, you did the best you could to save enough and to be ready.
Yeah, an example for me, I actually blew it this year. I switched corporations from C to an S or S to C, something like that. And by doing so, I certainly was able to have the 17.5 contribution for both myself and my wife, and didn't make the contribution for my wife. Kind of just forgot. I don't know. Didn't come up. I've made it every other year. I loved handing her that check with all the zeros in it that I get every year, saying all the money went to retirement program. I love doing that every year. I didn't do it this year. And putting that extra $17,000 into my retirement plan, or not putting it, actually cost me about $6,000 in taxes right now, because I save about a third on that. So anyway, another reason to reach out, get the appropriate professionals. One more time, Alex Canander, Certified Financial Planner with DM Brenner & Associates. Her website, dmbrenner.com. That's the website, dmbrenner.com, dmbrenner.com. As well as Marguerite Lorenz, partner at Lorenz Fiduciary Services. Her website, mytrustee.net. That's the website, mytrustee.net. Thank you, ladies, both, for being here.
Thank
we'll talk to you next
Thank
week.
You, Ryan. Thanks, David.